Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave, the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program on Health Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Join Dave and his guests now and every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Health Star Worldwide as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day so you can live your caregiver life more fully and abundantly. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous, the world famous Health Star Worldwide Radio Network. Still got to get used to saying that. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and I'm going to guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Yes, I know it sounds as nasty as it is. Now, we have an exciting show planned for you today. Our guest today is Jennifer Reeves with her service dog, talking all about the magical, amazing benefits of service dogs for caregivers and their loved ones. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this interview. Unfortunately, folks, my usual co-host, Adrienne Gruberg, founder of the Caregiver Space, had a prior commitment today, so she will not be joining us. Too bad also, because she also has a service dog. Would have been a good addition to the show. Now, if you're new to the show, and we get many new listeners every week, especially here on Blab, I'm your radio host, Dave Nassani. This show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers, well, let's see, they're caring, they're selfless, they're sacrificial. Oh, yeah, and they're very prone to burnout. So, you know, they put everyone else's needs above their own, and that's why the airlines, when you board a plane, they tell you things like, in the unlikely event of an emergency, if the oxygen mask falls out of the ceiling, put your mask on first before you help your child with their mask. Well, why do they say that? How selfish, right? Well, the reason they tell you all of that is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones. And then guess what? You won't be of any help to anybody with anything. And I guess caregivers are exactly the same way. So there's something to learn from there. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there is only one way out of the grief process, and you got to go through the grief process. You can't go around it, can't go over it, can't go under it. You got to go through it. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like, you know, you're stuck. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show and my radio podcast, my books, my videos, my blog. I know it sounds like it's all about me, but it's not. It's actually all about you. So go to my website, caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregiverscaregiver.com. And take our short quiz that will assess if you are a candidate for burnout. And just for doing that, you know what I'm going to do for you? I'm going to send you my very first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. Absolutely free. Gosh, $10 value. How generous. Hey, I want to take this moment now and thank last week's guest, Crystal Meisner. When and how you should ever consider hiring a professional caregiver. Great show. It's on podcast. Just go to my website. This show and every show is going to be on podcast as well, on the internet forever. All right, enough of that. Jennifer, let me unmute you. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for patiently sitting through all that introduction stuff for our first-time listeners.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for agreeing to come on the show today. I really appreciate it. And your little dog, Jimmy, who is a service dog, why don't you take a couple of minutes and just tell us who you are and how it is that you are happen to be on the show talking about service dogs, of all things.
Yes. I was at an event with you a couple weeks ago and ran into you. And Jimmy is my service dog, comes everywhere with me. And he's definitely changed my life.
Well, that's a big statement. He changed your life?
Yes.
Give me one thing that he did that changed your life. That's amazing.
You know, he kind of reconnected me, honestly, with people and with a purpose.
Ah, so you feel that unconditional love, right?
Absolutely.
You know, dogs are amazing. I love dogs. You know, I'm not very fond of cats, but I heard this joke one time. How do you know if your dog loves you more than your wife? You put them, you lock them both in the trunk for 1 hour. And when you let them out, you see who's more excited to see you.
Yeah, no question about that.
All right, Jennifer, let's start with the basics here. What is a service animal?
So there's different types of service animal. Typically, the definition of a service animal is a dog that provides a service and or work or task for a specific function and or disability. So, you know, general service that most people are kind of aware of or seeing eye dogs. Now there's different, you know, for different reasons, you could have seizures, for example, or diabetes or anything like that. And then there's emotional support animals that are a little bit more looser. And then there's psychiatric service animals as well. So they potentially perform, you know, different functions than the typical, you know, physical services that people are familiar with.
Well, that's amazing. So what does it take to apply for a service animal? I mean, do you have to be on a list? Do you have to have a recommendation? Does it cost money?
Well, when I first got Jimmy, yes and no. It was actually a really interesting process that I've kind of gone through. So I adopted Jimmy. He was a rescue dog, March 2015. So it was a year ago. And Jimmy is actually completely blind. He's got cataracts and flash retinas. Yeah. So that's always kind of deceiving too. So everybody's like, oh, he's a service dog. He's blind. What service does he provide then? Right.
So you like need each other.
Yeah. We definitely become, you know, instantly, like when I got him, you know, I was in a very different time and space in my life. And I moved here 2.5 years ago or 3.5 years ago, give or take, from Canada. All my family, friends, and everybody are back in Canada. And I've moved 5 times in 9 years. Wow. And I was lonely, as, you know, a lot of people are. And, you know, I kind of just stumbled upon him. I knew I wanted a dog, adopted him, and instantly we bonded. And, you know, I was very fortunate that the work environment that I have is open to pets and animals. So I kind of asked the people I work with if it was, okay, you know, what they thought before getting him. And then I started taking him to work with me. And past that, I then realized I felt like I needed to take him everywhere with me. And, you know, a lot of people probably have this about their pets and everything. And for me, I have been seeing a psychologist for a number of years for various different reasons. And it, for me, it's very personal. And a lot of people who potentially have service dogs, if they fall under the psychiatric service dog, it's very loose a lot of the time. So technically, under the American Disability Association, which kind of writes a lot of rules for different service dogs. And every different state has different rules and legislations as well as how they define that. But from, you know, kind of looking into it a little bit more and, you know, wanting him and or realizing the function that he provided for me, you don't have to get registered or certified. They don't require any formal certification. There's a lot of certifications out there online that you can just go to, pay $29 and get a certification, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. And you don't also formally have to get them trained either. There's kind of a preconceived notion that they have to have formal training from somewhere or something, but you can personally train your dog to, you know, fulfill a function depending on what that might be for you. So there's, from what I've looked into and from what I've researched with the ADA, there's no formal certification that needs to be required or no formal training necessarily.
So your dog was actually your dog before he became a service dog. Wow. That's amazing. I didn't know that that can happen. My wife, I was talking to you off the air earlier, suffered from a stroke 20 years ago. And getting a little dog, just about the size of your dog, was the best thing that ever happened to her. So how can we make her dog a service dog? Is there like a process?
So For me, it depends, I guess, what your intent is with the service dog. Like for me, he comes.
We hate
everywhere.
To leave him at home. She hates to leave him at home. We went on a vacation one time, and we almost got kicked out of the place because no dogs were allowed. But if it was a service dog, they couldn't say anything, right?
Right. So, like I said, there's an emotional support animal which you can get, and you can get accredited for pretty much anywhere, and you can deem your dog as an emotional support animal. And take it places with you. Now, service dog, again, is something slightly different. So it depends where you go. And like I said, what the state regulations and rules are as far as, you know, getting that qualified. Now, for airplanes, for example, hotels, anything like that, airplanes require, a formal letter from your psychologist for a service dog and or that kind of thing. So,
well, now we also have on the air here, Stephanie, who is a dog trainer. You got anything you want to toss into there, into the mix, Stephanie?
Yeah, I'm here.
Can we hear you? Is she hooked up? Is she wired, Blade?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay. I'm here.
It's the great internet question. Can you hear me now?
I am here. What was the question?
The question is, since you're a dog trainer, what can you throw on? I've been up all night, so I'm having trouble finding words in the English vocabulary here. Yeah. I'm searching.
What can I add to?
The question is, and if I can't come up with it, I'm sure you can.
Right.
The question is, what can you throw into this mix to help us understand the training that goes on with the service dog?
Okay, well, yeah, the service dog training is very extensive, actually. Like, if you were actually going in and training your dog as a service dog, like a guide dog for the blind or something along those lines, they have specific regulations that they have to adhere to in order to make the service dog serviceable. You know, they will bring him in as a puppy about 6 months old, and start training them from that until about 2 years old. And the handler is actually somebody totally separate from the disabled person.
Yeah,
so, the handler will come in, they'll take the dog over, and they'll teach it everything that it needs to know in order to service the particular person in regards to, like, say, blindness, for instance. The dog is going to stop at every corner. It's going to, it's not going to allow its owner to go past a certain line when you're out in public. And you definitely don't want to approach the dog while it's working, as far as that goes, because that's like, it's a distraction, really. And you don't want the dog to be distracted from doing its job, which is, in fact, caring for the human that is attached to the other line of that leash.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, as far as the training goes, it's very extensive, and it's kind of like undercover, deep secret, because they want the dogs. Yeah, because they kind of want the dogs to know how to do that, and they don't want the humans to know how to untrain them. You know, once they've got that function, they want them to keep those functions. So they don't want the humans to be able to untrain them by allowing them to be lax on their training as far as that goes. Like, so they keep them on a tight regimen and try to keep their training under wraps, so that when they do hand them back to the owner gets a specific line of commands that they can give to the dog, and the dog will adhere to those commands for sure and won't lose those ever throughout its lifetime.
Well, that makes sense. Jennifer, what does do work or perform tasks mean?
So again, specific, that one again is kind of potentially,
it depends on what the dog is doing.
It depends what the service is, right? Like I said, where it kind of starts to get fun and fuzzy is potentially like psychological or psychiatric service talks. Mm-hmm. Right.
Let's talk about that one. What exactly does your dog do for you, if you haven't already gone over that?
Right. So, that's where it can potentially get a little bit sensitive for some people, right? When people ask, like, what kind of service potentially does that provide? Because typically people with a psychiatric service dog, it's personal, right?
Sure.
And so it can kind of get a little bit uncomfortable because that's something potentially private for me and or the person with their dog and or their psychologist therapist. Not everybody wants to air their dirty laundry with, every person on the corner of the street. So, you know, for me, you know, there's a number of kind of, you know, social anxiety and post-traumatic stress and, you know, some personal issues, you know, that I've kind of been dealing with and dealt with that I don't necessarily disclose with everybody on a day-to-day basis.
I wouldn't think so, yes. I've got some questions here I wanted to ask you. Are emotional support, therapy, comfort, or companion animals considered service animals? I think we already answered that. Yes, they are.
It could be subjective, right? Like you have to ask yourself. So for example, with social anxiety or something like that, a dog can be trained to perform, like to nudge you or to kind of distract you or disengage you if you start to get like anxiety and or like any kind of social situation.
And they can sense like that. They can sense when you're like freaking out or feeling, you know, withdrawn.
Right, or if you have like a clinical depression or such, right? Like your dog will kind of like wake you up in the morning and or remind you like, okay, it's time to get up, right? It's time to move. It's time to go for a walk. Or, hey, it's time to take your medication or something like that, right? So they can be a cue and a reminder. They provide a service and or act, right? Like they're working. They remind you. They do something for you versus just, you know, making you feel good.
I have a friend who's a paraplegic and his dog is specifically trained to open doors for him and bring him things because he can't do it, obviously. So if someone's dog calms them when, my eyesight, if someone's dog calms them when having an anxiety attack, does this qualify as a service animal? Well, I think you just said that, right? And are service animals required to be professionally trained?
Again, you know, kind of going back to what, you know, it depends what the service is that they're fulfilling, right? So for me, and from my understanding with the ADA and the things that I've gone through, you can train your own dog to fulfill a service or something like that. You don't necessarily have to get it professionally trained. As she mentioned earlier, you know, a lot of the time it is helpful, depending on what the service is, to get them professionally trained so that the owner doesn't necessarily, you know, untrain the dog. So it depends on what the function and or the service is. Technically, according to the ADA, American Disability Association, they don't formally have to be trained.
Okay. Well, I just want to apologize to everyone. I feel like I'm playing with half a deck here because I've gotten like 1 hour sleep last night and I'm trying to pass a kidney stone and all of this stuff and I'm a little disoriented. So if I'm asking the same questions over and over again, give me some grace. Lade, I think we're going to take a break. And we'll be back in a couple of minutes, so don't go away, everybody.
Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver radio program on HealthStar Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. With roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, it's about one-third of the population. That means everybody probably knows somebody caring for a loved one. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Mothers of special needs children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases. The list goes on. Join Dave and his guests every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on HealthStar Worldwide as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. You'll start feeling better in no time as you begin to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help you get through the day and to live life more fully and abundantly.
And we're back with Jennifer Reeves and who else do we have there? Stephanie, dog trainer, and who also has her own radio show, by the way. I noticed we have some people listening in. Christopher says that he is a nonverbal severe autism and he has a service dog. I've invited him to come on. So if you want to join us, Christopher, go right ahead. As far as Stephanie, you have trained dogs, but have you trained specifically service animals as well?
I've gone through a little bit of service dog training as far as that goes. But I found that exclusively, like, you're essentially training the humans. So regardless of you're training the dog, you know, the dog will always know what to do if you're teaching it how to do something and you reinforce its acts. They will continue to do that. But in turn, you're also training the humans as far as that goes. And when you're training a service dog, it's a little different because you're training the dog to notice the needs of the human himself, yeah. You know, like whether it be
And dogs are very perceptive, aren't they?
Well, they're extremely perceptive, very, very smart, and extremely intuitive. So they will, in fact, pick up on your behaviors if you are having a problem or something of that nature. You know, they pick up on fear. They sense, they sense everything, essentially. If you're mm-hmm. connected to that leash, then they're feeling you, too, in that way. So if you feel nervous, if you feel like anxiety, if you feel, angry, sad, mad, happy, they're going to feel all of those things, too. So it's very important to make sure that your dogs are trained in some respect, at least to adhere to your disability, regardless of what it is, whether it be eyesight or emotional or physical disabilities.
Yeah. And some of you know that my wife had a stroke 20 years ago, and she lost her speech, the language part of her brain. So she, everything coming in is good. She can understand and she can read, but everything going out kind of got tweaked. She can't write very well because she can't remember how to spell the words, and can't remember how to form the sounds, the tongue, the lips to make. It's like being a stutterer, and you know what you want to say is right on the tip of your tongue. You just can't spit it out. And yet, I've learned so much since we got the dog, because watching those two communicate is amazing. Because they both have the same disadvantage. They can't talk, right? Dogs communicate with their eyes, with their ears, with the sounds they make, with the movements and the motions. And my wife, I mean, we go to a restaurant every now and then, actually every week, date day. And sometimes she strikes up a conversation with people and she can't talk. And this one guy one time, they're just having a conversation. You know, I'm doing something over here with, we had other guests with us. And I look over there and they're talking. And I look over 20 minutes later, they're still talking. And I said, what are they talking about? And they're just going on and on and on, because 85% of communication is nonverbal. So therefore, you know, the words are not really important. It's the tonality. It's not what we say, but how we say it. It's the eyes. It's the touch. It's the gestures and all of that. And she's got that down to a science. Well, and you can certainly learn that from a dog as well.
She dogs respond to body language, regardless of anything. That's their main reading of you is body language, because they don't understand your words. They understand your tone of voice, and they understand body language.
And eye contact. And all signals. I have to do is make eye contact.
Yeah, and signals.
And it just opens up a whole thing.
It makes a big difference. That's how they read you, essentially. So if you are having signals of stress, anxiety, pain, you know, anything like that, of course your service dog should be responding to you in that respect. You know, it's kind of important. If they're not, then they do need to be formally trained. But, you know, as Jennifer said, a lot of the times they don't necessarily need to be formally trained unless you want them to be socially acceptable.
You know, I don't get it why there's such a conflict about animals in public. Some people, have you found this, Jennifer, just really get bent out of shape that you have a dog. How dare you bring a dog in here, you know? And do some people just really give you attitude?
There's some people that are definitely interesting about that for sure, right? And, you know, I just smile and I'm like, he's a service dog, thank you, right? And, you know, I don't have children, but I kind of feel that, you know, if children are in a lot of places, you know, so should my dog sometimes. I'm like, you know, for him, anyhow, you know, like talking about being trained, he's definitely more well-behaved than most children a lot of the time. He you know, there is an expectation that they are to be trained, right? And to be under, you know, because regardless of that, like he sits well and he listens, he doesn't bark or anything like that. But
Yeah, I saw
I get more the inverse type.
I saw at the mastermind meeting, and he was just really nice.
Right. Yeah. Most people don't notice him there, but it is really interesting the responses that you get from some people. I would say most people actually open up a lot more and smile when they see him than the inverse. There's the occasional person who's a little grumpy and, you know, personally offended that there's a dog there, but you know, for the most part, most people are actually, it brings them out of their shell, gives them a conversation piece, and makes other people more comfortable too.
Yeah.
So now, is a vest required that says service dog, or is that not a big deal?
It's easier with a vest for people to recognize them, and then they're less likely to ask questions. But it is not, like, again, you know, every place is kind of different. But according to the American Disability Association, it's not necessarily required.
Yeah.
They have very finite guidelines when it comes to that, don't they, Jennifer? As far as like the, like for say, for example, the people with the emotional disabilities,
mm-hmm.
and you have an emotional support dog. Now, that differs completely from being like a guide dog for the blind or something like that. And they have a lot of different regulations for them, don't they?
Yes, they're not technically defined. Like an emotional support animal is not technically a service animal.
Okay, so what's the difference between like a service animal and a emotionally defined animal? You know, or the animal that is doing the emotional support.
Right. So an emotional support animal is not trained to perform a specific act directly related to the individual's disability. Instead, the owner just derives the overall sense of well-being and safety or calm from the animal companion's presence.
Right. So, like, you could basically take that dog anywhere with you?
For an emotional support animal?
Yeah.
Again, every state has kind of different rules and regulations. I wouldn't, from my understanding, not necessarily. Some people are kind of okay with it, and some people have the right to refuse service if it's an emotional support animal versus a service animal.
Right. And now, are they allowed to ask if they are an emotional support or a service animal? Or is it required for you as a dog owner to tell them?
They're allowed to ask what, like, you know, is your dog a service animal? Again, an emotional support animal technically isn't a service animal because it doesn't function. So you could say an emotional support animal, and it's kind of their discretionary whether or not they'll allow that, because there are strict rules and guidelines whether or not they will allow that. So from my experience, it's kind of subjective to wherever you go.
Right.
So they can refuse entry for an emotional support animal versus it's almost illegal for them to refuse entry for a service animal.
It's definitely situational in regards to your specific location as far as that goes, right?
Mm-hmm. Every state has different laws.
Right. Right. So, okay, and you're in California, and obviously, like, they let the dogs go pretty much anywhere. I mean, I know they're very free over there. I'm from Los Angeles myself, so, yeah, I do know that I can pretty much take my dog anywhere without somebody, like, flipping out on me about it. But right. As long as the dog is well-behaved.
Right.
It makes it a lot easier to take her into wherever I need to take her into if she's not getting all puffed up over, you know, anything.
So does the training include not getting distracted with another dog or stuff like that? You know, because the last thing you want is your service dog see something over there and just freak out and go, right?
Absolutely.
So is that part of the training, I would assume?
Yeah, definitely part of the training. That's something that... that is one of the main categories of the training, is to make sure that service dog is not going to be, you know, distracted, is not going to run off or run you in the middle of traffic or something like that, especially if it's a physically or for somebody with a physical disability.
Yeah.
Right.
So Jennifer, for those who are saying, well, I don't think I would qualify for a service dog, how many different qualifications are there? How many different kinds of service dogs are there? We know there's some for the blind and some for paraplegics, et cetera, emotional support, like you said. Anything else?
Well, you know, the physical services are always the obvious ones that everybody thinks of, mm-hmm. right? And like you said, the blind, the physically impaired, like, you know, physically impaired of some kind, those are the, you know, the ones that are a lot more common. Now, psychiatric service dogs, you know, that's where things get a little bit more subjective, right? And or what task specifically does it perform? And that can get a little bit questionable whether it's a psychiatric service dog and it's performing a specific function or if it's just an emotional support animal. Do you just like your dog being around you all the time, right? A lot of the people with a psychiatric service dog, you know, it's a disability, whatever that, you know, being clinically depressed or, you know, having post-traumatic stress or anything like that. Mm. And that's generally difficult topic to discuss in just in general, whether or not, you know, somebody has that or doesn't, because just a psychological assessment overall is kind of subjective sometimes. So again, to have it as a psychiatric service dog, does it perform a specific function, right? Like, does your dog, you know, sense you're having an anxiety attack or, you know, social anxiety of some kind, and does it like nudge you or get you out of that state of mind in order to kind of disassociate you? So again, it provides a specific service to be qualified as a psychiatric service dog, which would still qualify as a service dog versus uh-huh. just an emotional support animal.
If we have a question from someone. Let's see what it says. Any ideas on how I can care for my dog if I'm nonverbal? Can I ask, could I come on the cam after show to get some help? I have a service dog for autism, severe autism. So how can he contact you, this individual, and find out more, or even Stephanie, find out more about, I guess he has trouble communicating, so he can't come on the camera. So maybe before the show is over, we'll share your contact information, emails, website, etc., to get a hold of you. So we will answer that. And Blade, there's somebody who wants to send a picture of his dog, and mm-hmm. he wants you to do something. Are you reading the comments on the side?
Well, I am. I'm making the comments on the side.
Okay.
His question is this, Dave, too, is what I wonder if autism applies for service dogs.
Oh, I'm sure it probably does.
Anybody know?
I'm sure it probably does. I imagine, you know, depending on his hindrances or disability, as far as that goes, if he's physically disabled, then definitely, absolutely, he can apply for a service dog.
I'm assuming that
emotionally, first, Jennifer. I mean,
yeah, I'm assuming that first there was the seeing eye dog, and then all these other classifications came later. Jennifer, how long has the a classification for what you use your dog for been around?
I'm not sure how long the classification itself has been around. And like I said, it's subjective, I think, to every state. And again, I'm new to California, like 3 years or whatever. So I haven't looked into Canada.
Oh, that's right.
So I haven't necessarily looked into all the laws in Canada or anything. I've only really kind of started to get into it once I adopted Jimmy and he became a part of my life. And then I kind of started to educate myself a little bit more and have a more of an understanding of what that means.
Yeah. Now, do the service dogs have to be on a leash, even if they're trained and they won't, they'll just stay by your side? Mm-hmm. Are they limited? You know, they're not allowed to bark. I mean, tell me some of that stuff, that the rules for the dog.
Right. Yeah. The American Disability Association requires the service animals to be under control of the handler at all times. They must be harnessed, leashed, or tethered while in public places, you know, unless they're performing a service, in which case they can't be on a leash, right? Like if they've got to, you know, go into a room ahead of time or something like that. But it is required that they're to be, you know, on a leash and or well trained and or under control at all times.
Good. Well, let's take another break and we'll be right back in a couple of minutes, so don't go away.
One leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is a One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is a touching story about Charlene, a stroke survivor,
Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resembled that of both a Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. She met her husband Dave 21 years earlier. They had a wonderful fairy tale storybook-like courtship that soon culminated in their marriage. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left, finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn. She started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought them all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, their love then produced Rebecca. They all had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive. To survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope that everything happens for a reason and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone that meets her. Best-selling author Lynn Barrington says, "If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story from the heart. It is inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light." 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch, says, "Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror. As the Bible states, you will be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through." Order your copy today from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com. And Dave and Charlene will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
Yeah, I think we're back. I don't know where Dave went.
Come on, Dave.
Can't hear you, Dave.
Dave.
He can't hear anything?
I muted myself. I am so sorry. But you saw my lips moving, right? That reminds me of the joke. How do you know when an attorney is lying when his lips are moving? But I'm not an attorney. As I was saying, Jennifer, I saw something online during the break, and I wanted to read it to you because this kind of talks about the frustrations that people, you know, those nasty people who we're talking about who have attitudes about your dog. This one is called Frustrated by Fake Service Dogs. People are posing their pets as service animals to give them an all access to grocery stores, restaurants, and other places where pets are not allowed. Disabled people with real service dogs say this fraud adds to the discrimination they already faced. So here you got people who already have service dogs, and they're attacking, you know, other people with service dogs. It's almost like the Republicans attacking the Republicans. You know, should they be attacking the Democrats? What's your feeling about that?
Yeah, you know, I for a while there, you know, I get that too, and I get pretty sensitive sometimes about that because for me, I feel like it's a personal attack on me when, you know, I kind of, you know, I take a look at the dog, right? Is the dog causing a problem to you? You know, is it disruptive? Is it barking all the time? You know what I'm saying? Like, you kind of got to ask, like, if it's not bothering anybody, it's well-trained, you know, he's by my heels all the time. You don't barely notice him. What's the point in getting upset about it? Right? Like, you don't know what my...
There must be a jealousy, a deep-rooted, deep-seated jealousy going on. Says, hey, you know, it's like the natural born citizen versus the citizen who was an immigrant, you know? It's like, I think it's a jealousy thing. That's what I think.
Right.
Well, what if the dog takes a dump in the restaurant?
Right, but it's not necessarily a jealousy thing. I think a lot of people, because I worked in the restaurant industry for a long time as well, and I think that a lot of people are germaphobes, and they kind of freak out about having an animal where they're eating and where their food is being prepared. Now, the animal is not necessarily right where the food is being prepared, but it is where the food is being served, and most people, you know, they put their dogs outside when they are eating, so... You know, that would be something that they probably think hey, you know, you should put your dog outside too when you're eating. However, if the dog is providing a service for you at that point in time and is not bothering anybody and is not, you know, like trying to beg off the person or nipping at the heels or barking or, you know, breathing on them, then what's the problem really? And well, I see that too.
Some people just don't like dogs. I mean, I've met people.
Some people don't.
You know, they were bitten by a dog when they were younger and they're just like all freaked out and phobic. So it's just,
I personally find that some people are grumpy and they just want to be grumpy and they're looking for an excuse sometimes just to complain in general, right? Like I said, you know, if I have people that say something, I just smile and I'm like, he's my service dog. Thank you.
You're so cute.
Jennifer, where do you
smile? I can't imagine someone.
Always thank them when they get grumpy on you, Jennifer. Always thank them.
But where do you generally run into the problem or the issue of them actually complaining about the dog? Is it in a food environment or is it in like the library, per se?
I don't actually get anybody really complaining. By the time he's like, you know, I'll have restaurant vendors when I'm going to be seated ask if he's a service animal, in which case I say yes. And then he's by my feet most of the time. Most people don't notice him. Right. So generally speaking, I don't have people approach me there. It's kind of the odd place. Like the other day I was going for a walk along the beach on the path.
Yeah.
And I had a, you know, disgruntled woman feel it really important to inform me that dogs weren't allowed on the path.
Right.
So it's kind of weird, odd places sometimes where people kind of come out and get frustrated at.
That's really funny because I would find it to probably be like in the food environment, I would see where people could possibly get a little bit, you know, miffed about it. But I know about on the beach too, because they often would kick us off the beach and say, hey, you know, no dogs on the beach, no dogs on the path. You know, there's the dog park for that.
And I love taking my dog on the beach.
But there's Rosie's dog beach.
There is. There's like one dog beach out of a million that are not dog beaches.
Just a secret. In Ventura, they're really lax on that rule. They'll just kind of, you know, turn the other way.
Uh-huh. I think it depends on the beach and the people, to tell you the truth. But yeah.
And I keep forgetting, Jennifer, that your dog is blind or almost blind. It's like, that's amazing. It's like, it's like the dog, like you are the dog's service person, you know, like a two-way
street.
Right,
like it is, you know, and I get that back. I get that feedback from people too, because he's not your regular service dog too. He's not partially blind. He's completely blind. He's got both cataracts and detached retinas as well, so he can't see at all.
All right, but so he's always on a leash.
He's always on a leash. He's absolutely always on a leash. But you know, little things like I'm significantly much more aware of my surroundings, right? And I have my head up. I'm not sitting there looking at my iPhone, right? So I'm significantly that much more engaged in my surroundings, having him with me as well. So that does wonders for me personally.
That's good. Now, we are just about to the end of our hour, and I wanted both of you to give your contact information. If anybody has any questions about service dogs or dog training in general, just let us know how we can contact you. You first, Jennifer.
Sure. So I'm J Reeves, R-E-E-V-E-S, 0823 at gmail.com.
All right. And Stephanie?
Actually, you can contact me at... let's see, where should I send these people? I have so many different places to send everybody that it's...
Stephanie's a DJ on a terrestrial radio station, so that's why she sounds so cool.
Oh, thanks. send to my email, Stephanie Shepherd, S-H-E-P-P-A-R-D, at Stephanie Shepherd, K-L-A-S-F-M, at live.com. If you have a question, I can respond back there.
Now, I asked Christopher a question because he's nonverbal, so he can write, apparently. How does your dog help you to function better as an autistic? And he said, it keeps me under close supervision. Whoa. It keeps me under close supervision to my parents, so I do not wander off, since nonverbal and also tells them when I am struggling with my CP lower body. So that's interesting. There's a good perspective on how a service dog can help an autistic person. So, late. I think we're at the end of our hour. So thank you so much. This hour went so fast, and I've learned a lot. And I'm going to check into finding out if my little dog, which I showed you earlier, can be a service dog. That would be so cool. Mm-hmm. But I think it would be a great benefit to my wife. And because it breaks her heart sometimes when we have to go somewhere and she leaves the dog home. You know, dogs suffer from anxiety, separation anxiety, you know. And there's some movie out. I haven't even seen it yet. It's like, what really happens when you leave the house and the dogs are just staring at the door? You know,
right.
Dogs are so funny.
The only thing I would say to that, you know, as the defense is, you know, it is important to have your service dog well trained, right? Yeah. And or, you know, be kind of incognito, I guess, in public places so that, you know, it for the people that, you know, do have legitimate services, whatever their disability may be, that they don't necessarily get a bad rap for everybody who just wants to have their dog with them that's potentially not well trained and or, you know, it kind of takes a lot of attention away from the people with disabilities.
Yes. Blade, Christopher typed something else here. Can you type if I have low muscle tone so can't write?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure what that means. Do you know what he's trying to say there?
Yeah, he wants you to answer his questions, I guess, by typing in the chat box. I think that's what he means, yeah. You can just still do that and hang out here after the hour ends, Dave. But
yeah.
And he also wants me to DM some photos. What does that mean? You're the...
What does DM mean?
Yeah.
The techie person knows that, doesn't she?
Stephanie would know. What's it mean?
DM?
Yeah, he wants me to DM some
like a
photos.
District manager. Direct message.
Probably direct message. Some photos.
That's what it is.
Or, you know, like that's instant message.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Christopher, do you want the emails typed out as well that they gave?
Now, Jennifer, is there a service dog registry, like a website that people can go to if they wanted to look into getting their dog registered as a service dog?
Again, it depends on the type of service.
Right.
So for me, being a psychiatric service, what I found is that there's a lot of different websites that you could go to technically register your dog as a service dog. The AADA doesn't necessarily require any of those.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different websites if you type out there that'll give you certification, but it doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Right.
Okay.
So
Jennifer, can you actually type your email in the lower right-hand corner of the thing? And Stephanie, could you do that as well? I think that's what he's asking for.
We could do
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Yes, I'll do it for her.
Blades my fingers over there right now.
Again, thank you guys for coming on. Really, really appreciate it. I'm so sorry Adrian didn't join us because she has her dog and we could have all been having a good old time here. So until next week, 1 o'clock Tuesday, we'll see you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani. Join Dave each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific or catch the program anytime 24/7 right here on HealthStar Worldwide.